Hi there, a very warm welcome back to the Safety Podcast, where we aim to help you break down the barriers to health, safety and environment learning to help you stay motivated, improve your knowledge and maximise your impact. Today on the show we have Laura Alcott, who is Business Partner and Contract Specialist with the HSE Recruitment Network. Laura is hands down one of the most knowledgeable HSE recruitment specialists in the UK, and she's thankfully come on the show to share with us some deep insights into what is a more and more competitive HSE market. If you're trying to improve your career prospects within the HSE space at the moment and you feel like you're not getting anywhere and you would like to find out where the biggest opportunities lie for you to raise your profile and get noticed by the people that are making the decisions, this is really going to be worth listening to.
Welcome to the Safety Podcast with your host, all the way from a small green island in the wild Atlantic Ocean, Richard Collins.
Laura Alcott, thank you so much for coming on to the Safety Podcast. I've been trying to get you on for a few weeks and we had our technical difficulties today as well, but we persisted and now we're talking, so welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Absolute pleasure. Obviously, got you on the show today, and we were discussing back and forth what would be valuable for our audience here, and you were saying that you were lining up a little event with HSE Recruitment Network regarding how to stay relevant in the marketplace.
Yeah.
And hopefully we can shed some light on the difficulties that people are facing and show them some ways that they can take some action to do something about it.
Yeah, let's hope so.
Cool. So tell us a bit more about, some of the people on the, you know, listening to this show will know you already, Laura. Just for the ones that don't, can you give us a wee bit about your background just? And obviously you've been heavily involved in HSE recruitment for quite a while now.
For a long time, yeah. So, so I work at HSE Recruitment, as you said. So I'm a partner over there and I head up the contract division. So I've been working with them for, nearly 9 years now, so pretty long time. So I think I'm in a pretty good position to know what companies are looking for, you know, what issues we're facing in the marketplace at the moment. And hopefully, like you said, if I can just give you a few tips on how to make yourself stand out and how to make sure that you're getting where you want to go in your career, I think that would be pretty helpful. So, yeah, fingers crossed.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you've been, as you say, working in the industry in the recruitment end of it for, you know, quite a number of years. There's probably not too many people that have worked in that, you know, specialism for so long and obviously work as hard as you, because you're going above and beyond all the time doing events like you did recently there and trying to engage with, you know, with the people in the profession, which is great. One thing I did notice you saying there was that you felt that the market was quite saturated at the moment.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, of course. So unfortunately, it's kind of unwelcome news. And I think most people probably won't be honest with you about that. I think the message from most people at the moment is that obviously health and safety is really buoyant, which it is. You know, we're not refuting that. There are loads and loads of roles out there as companies become more and more aware of their expectations in regards of safety and looking after their staff. Obviously, there are more jobs becoming available, but there are a staggering number of people that are joining the industry every single year. I mean, if you look at the fact that there's nearly 50,000 people registered with IOSH already, and that's not every safety professional in the UK. That is literally just the ones that have registered with IOSH. And then, I mean, there's over 600 course providers. You've got new qualifications coming out all the time with NCRQ, some of the new stuff that NEBOSH has been doing. You know, there's a lot of qualified people out there. So I think what we're trying to get across to people is just at the moment being qualified by itself is just not enough. I think maybe sort of about 5 years ago, having, you know, a good NEBOSH qualification and working in industry for a couple of years and you could take your pick of jobs. And unfortunately, I think we've got to work a little bit harder than that nowadays.
I think it's an extremely important message to get across to people. And, you know, I think you're really taking the correct approach and being honest. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of recruiters, I'm sure, don't want to make it obvious.
No, it's not a nice conversation to have, is it? To say to people, well, look, for every role that we put out or every role that a company puts out there, you're probably getting nearly 150 applications for it. And those aren't applications with no merit. You know, most of those people have got the qualifications. You know, we're not saying all of them are equally good. Of course, we're not. But it's just to sort of give you an idea of the fact that, yeah, the soft skills and all that extra stuff is so, so important nowadays to make you stand out.
Yeah, it keeps coming back to that conversation about soft skills. Is there anything that you're seeing from people who are doing it correctly that you would like to highlight for those listening, you know, to point towards?
I mean, there's quite a few different ways that you can go to make yourself stand out. But the thing that always makes a safety professional stand out for me is massively their engagement in the marketplace. So that's not just going in and doing your 9-to-5 job. It's seeing people at these networking events, seeing them sort of going and learning more about legislation, being heavily involved in stuff on LinkedIn, doing all their, you know, their CPD with local IOS branches or whatever it is. It's really sort of going above and beyond to show how passionate you are about an industry. I think that's what people want most of all at the moment, is someone with passion. The old health and safety model of the clipboard warrior, you know, the old guy who just kind of walks around and yells at people and tells them what not to do, it couldn't be farther from what people want at the moment. So it's really demonstrating that you are that new person, that passionate person. He's going to think outside the box. He's going to make people excited about it as a subject, because health and safety is obviously fascinating. There's a reason people do it, and there's a reason I've been involved with it for so long. And it's got bad press for a really, really long time. But what we're seeing now is lots more positive stories out there, lots more companies with good initiatives and, like I said, thinking of different things. So that's the sort of stuff I want to see. People really, really getting involved, really showing that they love what they do.
Yeah, and I guess with that sort of progression of the profession, it's opening up more doors in terms of career and development, you know, and being able to work in organisations and go to, you know, director level and even beyond that as well, which obviously makes it more competitive and more attractive to people. I noticed you were saying as well, Laura, that some companies were stepping away from generalist roles. What can you shed a bit more light on that and what they're actually doing?
Yeah, so this tends to be a little bit more industry specific, but massively so in manufacturing, and it is creeping into the other industries now. Yeah, we're seeing that people don't want just sort of your generic generalist health and safety manager. What they're tending to look for is someone that they think is a little bit more well-rounded. So very much in the past, I think health and safety people have been quite guilty of sort of siloing themselves within a business and thinking, right, I'm health and safety, and I don't, as much as I interact with other departments, I sit very much by myself. And that's not something that companies want now. They want to see that you understand the commerciality of the business. So this is why I said it's quite a big thing in manufacturing. They want you to understand the bottom line, you know, the effects of production, the effects of stopping production. So what they tend to look for is someone who does health and safety and something else, whether that is health, safety and quality, health, safety, environmental, health, safety, facilities, maintenance, whatever it is. That they like people that can kind of show that they understand the business a little bit more. So one thing that's really, really popular definitely is people that have come up through the tools in that industry, because you definitely have a much better idea of what goes into production and what's important to the company when you've come through that sort of route. So that's the sort of stuff they're really looking for, the sort of stuff to emphasize is, well, again, like we said, coming back to your skills outside of health and safety, what else can you bring to the business? I think at the moment, it's kind of a given when you apply for a role that you can technically do the role. It's what else can you do for them?
Yeah, I think it's great that people from, as you say, you know, coming up from the tools and knowing businesses from, you know, being on the front line or coming up through management or coming from other organizations and bringing that knowledge through, it's really what needs to happen. And as you say, also there's other circumstances where maybe someone has managed people before, and you know, the skills that they have from that experience lends itself well to working in health and safety and environment. I think as well, there probably has been a bit of fear. As you say, there people have siloed themselves in the past and through doing that stopped upskilling themselves and therefore restricted their ability to grow and transition into broader roles and show their value better. And that becomes then a fear of others, you know, coming in with those skills, mm-hmm. doesn't it?
This is the thing that I talk about quite a lot, and I completely agree. I think it has probably held the industry back quite a bit when we talk about that siloed effect. And I understand why people do it. It's very much human nature to do this, but it's kind of been the idea in the past that, right, I'm the health and safety professional. I'm the only person with all this knowledge. If I'm the only person that holds on to this knowledge, you know, they can't get rid of me. They can't make me redundant. They absolutely 100% need me. And I understand the logic behind that, but that's just not the way that people want health and safety professionals to work anymore, because it's the old school mentality. You know, they want people that are out there sharing the knowledge and not just saying you can't do that because that's against legislation. It's getting people engaged and saying, you know, you're part of safety too. So yeah, I think that the fact that we haven't sort of shared that knowledge around as much in the past probably has held us back a little bit as an industry.
Yeah, it's a big step change, isn't it, in terms of the approach of sort of the you know, the protected kind of siloed department that has all the knowledge and doesn't want to share it because then they're sort of at risk of losing their authority.
Exactly.
It still happens in a lot of organizations, and I hear about it when I'm speaking to people. That's why we're doing this now. We're having the conversation. We need to be very honest. We need to be open, and we need to embrace things like commerciality, understand how what we're doing in our profession impacts the business's finances, along with the well-being of the workforce, and really, you know, really grasp it, because if you can translate that understanding to the directors of a company, then it puts you in a fantastic position.
Yeah, of course it does. If you can speak to a director of a business about the stuff they care about, which essentially is the bottom line, then you're much more likely to get that engagement from them rather than if you just go in and say, well, we can't do that. You know, it's a much better way of approaching things in the long run.
And you're saying some companies are looking for more specialist roles, you know, obviously there's variation across different industries. You know, you're obviously experienced in the contract end of things. If you were going from one contract to the other and you were struggling to get in because of the levels of competition, would you advise them, if they have one option, to go specialist and focus on, you know, a specialist area of risk? Or would you say actually go the other direction and broaden your skill set out to the likes of quality management, people leadership, that type of thing? What would you say there?
I mean, there's two sort of ways of looking at it. The first way is it depends on you as a person. You know, are you someone that prefers to be the expert on, you know, one tiny little bit of thing, or do you want to be more involved? But the main thing based on the market is probably that from a permanent perspective, the areas that understand other things, or that commerciality aspect, you know, bringing in quality or environmental, that tends to be quite popular from a permanent side. But from a contract side, yeah, the more specialist you are, the better. For example, most of the contract stuff we do doesn't tend to be just a health and safety advisor going in doing risk assessments or anything like that. It tends to be, you know, a COSH or a DSIR project, or it's looking at specific offshore stuff. You know, anything like that that's just got a little bit more niche to it, they tend to look at it on a contract side. So, yeah. I don't think if you want to go into the contracting market, it's going to hurt to make sure that, you know, you are quite specialist in one particular area, because you still understand health and safety as a rule. You can still apply for health and safety generalist roles. You're just giving yourself that little bit leg up and saying, well, actually, do you know what? I can market myself as the expert in this. And yeah, that's the sort of stuff that's probably going to help you pick up roles in the long term.
Yeah, I suppose, you know, if someone really drills down into their previous experience, they could probably specialize maybe easier than what they think, and then flip you know, between the two as necessary as the market expands and contracts, because we're probably at the upper end of the market cycle now. Would that be a fair assumption from what you've seen?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's been a bit of a strange year. It's been more up and down than usual, but Yeah, I would probably agree with that, where we are at the moment. And what you said about picking between the two sides, I 100% agree with, because one of the big things we always say to candidates is you don't just have one CV that goes to every single role that you apply for, because every single role is different. You know, as much as the day-to-day is the same, that company wants a different person or a different approach. So our advice is always to write a CV specific for that role you're applying for. So that way you can have, look, this is my specialist area of knowledge and this is my profile for when they need a Desire specialist. But actually, yeah, I can send you info if you want a generalist. If you want me to come in and just hold the fort down, I can do that as well. So that would be a big bit of advice, definitely, is to every single application should be completely different from the last, in my view.
Well, it's good to hear that from you, from what you've experienced. Something that I wanted to ask you about, and from a recruiter's perspective, you may think this is a good or a bad thing. I'm not gonna judge before you tell me. But I tend to hear, obviously, I ask a lot of questions about the industry, and I have a bit of a online presence and speak to a lot of people. I see and hear a lot of people chopping and changing from company to company within the sector, and you know, not being able to commit to even permanent positions for long periods of time. I'm not sure what's causing this, but can you give us any insight into what you've experienced and what your views are on it, and whether you see that as being, you know, damaging for those candidates and their future sort of prospects?
Again, probably not something you want to hear, but yeah, it's not ideal. When you are applying for a role, if it's not necessarily just the recruiter either, this might be a HR manager or a safety manager that's looking at the CV, it does tend to put a little bit of doubt in your mind when you see someone has moved and moved and moved and moved, unless they're a contractor, obviously. Companies are always looking for someone with longevity that's going to commit to them. Now, that doesn't mean that you will never get a job ever again just because you've made a couple of bad decisions, but the important thing is to make sure that you can very clearly explain why those changes happened, because people understand that things happen out of your control, whether it's been a couple of redundancies in a role or, you know, you've been missold something and it wasn't at all what they told you it was going to be. We get that, you know, we're human. But what I would always say is, maybe even if you just put a little explanation on the CV itself, just to sort of counter that negative impact before it even has a chance to register, because we are really looking for people for permanent recruitment that have had a bit of stability. Most companies see the ideal candidate as someone who isn't actively even looking to move. Usually they want us to be sort of tapping at people that, aren't looking for jobs. They're quite happy where they are because they're, you know, they can often be some of the better talent. And then they're moving genuinely because it's a role that they're fascinated by, and not just because it's the next sort of logical step or it pays a couple of grand more or whatever. I think it's quite important to get that definition on the CV if that's an issue that you faced in the past.
As you say, get a little bit more proactive in terms of trying to explain what has happened there, and don't necessarily, it's not always necessarily negative, and there could be genuine reasons for it.
Yeah, and people understand. Like I said, people's circumstances change, things happen. We do get that, but you want to get that explanation out in front of people. It's actually, I'm probably giving away some tricks of the trade here, but it is a bit of an old sales technique, is that you need to counter something before they say it. You know, that if you're thinking that there's something negative on your CV, then they're probably going to see it and they're probably going to think the same thing. So just make sure that you have a reason for it before they've got a chance to think negatively about it. It's always going to make you look a little bit better.
Following on from that sort of theme, the CVs, we've talked about it a lot. I'm sure you're sick to the teeth of talking about CVs, but I've been guilty of it myself in terms of applying for jobs can be demoralizing. It can be very difficult to get motivated to try and differentiate yourself. And sometimes it's hard to put a finger on what it is that stops you from doing something above and beyond. I know you guys are always sort of plugging the idea of having a social media presence and how that can really, you know, influence and impact the way you're perceived, and obviously then lead to potential job opportunities and so on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can you give us any idea as to what your thoughts are on this and whether you've actually, you know, whether there's any tangible experiences or examples that you can tell us about, you know, where it's actually been really positive for someone?
Yeah, of course. Well, this is probably one of my favourite subjects ever. So if you are in any way connected to me on LinkedIn, you'll see that I'm pretty much always on there. Social media is something you cannot get away from at the moment. So I don't care if you like it or you don't. You kind of have to get on board with it because it's just the way things are going.
Yeah.
Most agencies, most companies, anyone that's kind of recruiting, they always do a little bit of a background search. You know, if I see someone's CV that's interesting, whether they've applied or it's on the database or whatever, I always go and have a little look on LinkedIn and see what I can find out about them. See, one, if the information is correct that they've sent me across, you know, how up to date is it? Is there any sort of red flags that are showing up? And I'm not saying we go and search Facebook or Twitter or any of that. We do keep it professional, stick to LinkedIn, but you do get some pretty big clues from LinkedIn what a person is like. So having some sort of presence is massively important. But actually then doing something with that presence is the bigger thing altogether. We see so many people that just think, right, okay, so I'll set up my LinkedIn account. It's basically just a CV on that social media site, and then that's it, and then I'm done. I'll just sit back and I'll wait for someone to call me. And then they complain that LinkedIn doesn't get them a job. Because that's not what LinkedIn is for. LinkedIn is, for connecting to people, but connecting and engaging and networking, not just sort of sitting back and waiting for the phone to ring. So that's my big thing with LinkedIn, with social media, is you've got to be engaged. You've got to actually be talking to people, commenting. I say writing articles, people are really scared about that, but it's so easy to do. You do not have to be, you know, Shakespeare. You don't have to have a degree in English. You just have to have an opinion. It's as easy as that. So, for example, we had all the big case recently with Pret, and obviously that poor girl died from missing allergen information on that.
Yes.
So it's something I'd read quite a lot about. I found it really, really fascinating. So I just dashed together a quick little blog piece. It's literally two paragraphs just on my thoughts on it. You know, this is what I understood from reading it. This is what I thought about it. What does everyone else think? And that was brilliant because all of a sudden you've got all these people that you've been connected to forever who never ever talked to anyone, just getting involved. And I can see their passion for safety. I can see their angle, you know, where they're coming from, what their approach is. And it just makes them more of a well-rounded person. You know, CVs are just two-dimensional at the end of the day. They're not you. They're not a representation of you as a person. They're just a representation of what you've done. And people buy people.
Yeah, I have to agree. And, you know, there's probably not a lot of people that are really, truly utilizing, you know, the power that's on social media at the moment, I would say. I try and get involved and try and create conversations at times. And you know, it's not easy. It's not easy. Sometimes you hear crickets and you think, oh, geez,
yeah, that's true.
Geez, what have I said? What have I said? And I understand people's fear on it and I put my hands up and say every time I post something, I'm second guessing everything I'm saying, and you know, what's this person going to think? Is that going to be misunderstood, et cetera, et cetera? But I guess you just have to get over that a bit, and you know, if you're genuine, that in the most part, that will come through.
Even if you are misunderstood, that's not necessarily a bad thing because, it's just starting that conversation. If someone comes back and says, oh, do you know what? I don't agree with what you said there at all because this is why. Well, you've opened a dialogue there and all of a sudden you're getting someone else's point of view and you can either argue your point of view, you can change your point of view, but you're still having that dialogue and engaging with people. So, yeah, I personally don't think it matters. You know, put out there what you will and see what comes back from it. But just as long as it's real and it's you.
Yeah, I think so. One thing that struck me, someone said to me just a couple of days ago, was that someone who's sort of trying to make their way in the industry, they were saying that, you know, they were taking part in some conversations, but sometimes it can get a little bit of a, you know, a battle of wits or who can be the most intellectual, you know, and it puts a fear into people, from contributing in case they're sort of shot down.
Yeah, I get that. Tell you what, I'll give you a tip here. If you write something and someone is horrible to you or they're nasty back to you or they make you feel like an idiot, you can delete your comment So just get rid of it. Like it never happened. I'd rather people tried and then deleted it and thought, oh, okay, no, well, I was wrong. I'm going to take that back. But at least you tried.
Absolutely. Just actually developing on from that, and something that I really think people can set themselves apart if they do take this seriously. Now, I'm not saying that I've done it. Obviously, I make podcasts, which is what we're doing here now. So I guess that is a version of it. But actually putting things up like training sessions, seminars, or any sort of type of work that you've done, like people just aren't doing that. But I mean, what do you think about that? Do you see people doing it or?
Yeah, not enough at all. I don't think most people realise that you can put that sort of stuff up there. So on your profile, there's a section where you can upload documentation, but it doesn't have to be paper documentation. So on mine, I've got some company brochures. I've got some videos of me speaking. I've got some PowerPoint presentations from webinars I've done. You can share all that on your profile, and you can share it as actual content going out into the world as well. The most engagement on LinkedIn comes from what they call native content, which is your own videos and things like that. And that, again, is just such a great way of showing who you are as a person. So say I'm looking for a trainer for a company, right? The training qualifications are all pretty similar. You've all worked in the same sort of companies. I'll just kind of take you on your word for it that you're a good trainer. If I've got 100 of you all applying for the same role, it's very hard to differentiate. But if then I'm looking at all your social media, I'm looking at your LinkedIn, and your LinkedIn's got testimonials from all your students saying how brilliant you are, you know, what the pass rate's like. And then you've got videos up there of you actually teaching, and I can watch you and think, God, yeah, I'd listen to that guy or girl. Sorry. then you're the person I'm going to call first out of those 100. All that stuff just all of a sudden adds personality to your account and makes you a real person. That's what this is basically about. You're trying to make your CV stand out and make the hiring manager realize that you're a real, well-rounded person that they can see in their company. So, yeah, absolutely. Look at getting those videos up, getting those documentation up there. If you look at a group, the IOSH Staffordshire branch, who are really, really good at social media. And their events are brilliant as well, to be fair to them. But if you go and look at their channel, they've got their committee. They just literally, like, from their car, do little pieces to video, and they share stuff that they're thinking about or stuff they've been talking about, and it gets such good engagement, and you can really see who they are and what the group's about. And I think that's why they get so many people turning up to it. Absolutely, just full of personality. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I think so. I think it sort of links back nicely to what we mentioned, you know, just earlier on there about the skills that companies are looking for are the soft skills, your ability to engage, your personality, and the social media profiles now is just a perfect way to actually demonstrate that. And again, it's probably a little bit of fear within people that they're not actually doing it, but the fact that people aren't doing it is the exact opportunity that exists, you know, because if you do it, then you're the 1% amongst the rest. So
absolutely, yeah. There's hardly anyone doing it, and everybody should be doing it. So yeah, if you're the first to sort of hop on that bandwagon, then yeah, you're going to stand out head and shoulders above everyone else.
People will listen to us. Whether they take action or not is, you know, is up to them. But if there was one piece of action, if there was one action that you would advise people to take after listening to our discussion here to try and, you know, get them that step forward, what area would you say out of all those things would you ask them to focus on?
So it's going to sound like a bit of a broad answer, but it's because I want you to take it and do what feels right with you for it. But it, for me, it's all coming back to personality. I need to see who you are. And you can do that in any way you want, whether that's on social media, whether that's in person, going to networking or sharing videos or writing blogs or whatever it is. But just make sure that we can find your personality. I mean, I'll give you a great example of we held the Christmas party, the Birmingham Christmas party for the Women in Safety group last week. So we had a girl come across, I hope she won't mind me saying, a lady called Hannah, and she'd been to one of our events previously. she's quite new into the industry. She was just looking for some help and support as she came to our original event on, yeah, achieving your career aspirations. She was really, really brave. She plucked up the courage to come over and speak to me at the end. She asked for a couple of tips. I saw her sort of speak to a few people, but I could see she was quite nervous about it.
Yeah.
Last week we had the Women in Safety event. She came along to that one as well. And the difference was astounding. She sort of walked in, you know, full of purpose. She was speaking to people. She was making sure people knew who she was. That girl sticks in my head, though. The second I've got any sort of role for her or for someone like that, she's the first person I'm going to call because I've seen her personality and I've seen what she's about. So it just makes you memorable. So, yeah, that for me, I don't care how you show it, but just show me your personality. Make sure it's real. Make sure it's genuine because, you know, people see through it if you're trying to pretend to be something. People will like you for who you are and what you're passionate about. And that's probably the most important thing because then you're going to find a company that is equally passionate about the stuff that you're passionate about and wants to progress in the same way you want to progress. So whether that might take you a little bit longer because you are being a little bit more discerning then and saying, you know, they don't meet my values or they're not the same sort of people as me, I think that's the right way to go. So, yeah, so show personality in any way, any form. Just make sure we know who you are.
I think that's a great bit of advice, Laura, to finish this conversation on. And I know there's lots and lots of passionate people out there. Lots of them are obviously listening, will be listening to this podcast when it's released and obviously for some time to come. So hopefully they can take that and, you know, as you say, take action on it. Go and show people their personalities and, you know, let companies know who they are, what they're about, and the results will come in the end.
Absolutely, yeah. And if anyone wants further advice, you know, they're more than welcome to find me on LinkedIn. Like I said, you can't really miss me. I'm on there pretty much all day, every day. And just send me a message, and if we can help you or give you some advice or point you in the right direction, then we'll certainly try.
No worries, Laura. I'll put a wee link at the bottom of the show notes to your personal profile, if that's okay. And
yeah, that'd be great.
A link to the HSC Recruitment Network as well for anyone that wants to have a browse on what jobs are available any time. Thanks for coming on the show. It's been something I've been looking forward to, and I think we've got loads of great value for those listening, and hopefully we can do something in the future to continue to help people.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much for having me on. I've really enjoyed it.
No worries. Good stuff. Take care of yourself, and I'll chat to you soon.
Okay, you too. Bye.
So that was our call with Laura Aucott. I really hope I can get Laura back on the show again in the future. As you can hear, she's really, really passionate about the HSE profession and industry, and her dedication comes through in her work. Please link up with both me and Laura on LinkedIn. We will be talking about this subject on LinkedIn in the next few days after this is released, and we'd really love to hear your thoughts on the discussion. Also, it would be cool to hear your experiences, either positive or negative. What has worked, what hasn't worked, when you've tried to grow your network offline or you've tried to grow your online social media presence to enhance your career. That brings us to the end of another episode. Thanks for joining me. If you haven't already done so, please take a second if you can to join our community at safetypodcast.com to help influence our future direction. You can also subscribe to the podcast on Apple or Google Podcasts. If you can, I'd really appreciate it if you can leave us a quick, honest review. So until next time, keep stepping out of your comfort zone, keep making a positive impact on health, safety, and the environment, and hopefully we'll catch you again soon.
Thanks for listening to the Safety Podcast. We would love you to tell us which episode you would like to hear. Don't forget to give us a shout at safetypodcast.com.